What do you think will your future will be if you lose your fight for extradition and go back to Arkansas?
I don't think I'll have any future if I lose the fight. I definitely feel like they'll kill me if I go back.
Why?
Because, you know, the animosity that had been generated during the years that I was there, I've actually given them an excuse. You know, all I've got to do is say I tried to escape again, and they shot me.
This is Ozarks at Large, and I am pleased to announce that with me on the phone is Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy, it's been a couple of weeks since we've taken a new trip through the archives. I'm ready to go. How about you?
Hey, me too. It's great to be back.
Now, we're back, and we're going to revisit something, a topic that we kind of looked at earlier this spring.
Yes, twice. If you heard at the beginning, that was James Dean Walker. And I had mentioned that there was an interview that Jim Pidcock did in 1979 with him, and we just got in from the Media Preserve the material that was digitized from then. And if you didn't listen to the shows, you're probably scratching your head wondering who James Dean Walker was. So would you like a little recap?
Yeah, let's do a Reader's Digest version.
Okay. It was April 16th, 1963, and a guy named James Dean Walker was in Little Rock visiting from Reno, and he was with a friend of his named Russell Cumpy. And they were going to clubs, partying, and they got into a bar fight, and James Dean Walker had a gun, and he pistol-whipped a fella, and they fled, obviously, and they were driving to, they were going to go to Memphis, and North Little Rock police started chasing them, and they got just outside of town when they were stopped by Officer Gerald Vaughn. Well, make a long story short, there was a shootout. Walker was shot five times, and Vaughn was shot once in the heart and was killed.
Right.
So Walker stood trial. He was convicted, sentenced to death, and there was a second trial because of a legal technicality, and he was found guilty again and was sentenced to life in prison. And so that kind of brings us up to speed.
Okay. It brings us up to speed, but it does not end the story.
No, it's just beginning. In his time in prison, he became a model prisoner and became a trustee, which is the highest trusted inmate in the prison. And he became a born-again Christian and started being involved with the chapel, and to the point that they allowed him after several years to go out to churches and speak. Now, he was always accompanied by a guard or someone from the prison, but after a few years of doing that, they let him go out on his own. So Jim Pidcock, the news director at KATV, who covered him for years, kind of tells us about what happened after that.
Little Rock or Pine Bluff or wherever, and he would speak at various churches. And after a year or so, when he had this model behavior, they decided to let James Dean Walker, a prison inmate, sentenced to life in prison without parole, to go out on the furlough by himself. And that lasted for a year, maybe a little more than a year. And one weekend, he was on furlough and he had gone to Forest City. And by Monday morning, they realized that he had not returned.
So here you have a twice convicted murderer who has escaped. That's big news.
Yes, he just flat disappeared. And he was on the lam for 4 years. never surfaced, never heard from. And then Jim Pitcock gets a phone call in 1979 that Walker's been arrested in Nevada.
He had been picked up for a petty crime. And when the sheriff's office there at South Lake Tahoe submitted his fingerprints to the FBI, word got back that this was an escaped cop killer from Arkansas. So they immediately contacted authorities in Arkansas, and Arkansas put a hold on him. Arkansas said, we'll come and get him. Well, James Dean Walker fought extradition for 2 years. He said, I want to go back to Arkansas, back to Arkansas. They will put a price on my head. I won't last more than several weeks.
We should also point out that there are people who think he is not guilty of the murder as well, and that will play in.
Right. He had a big following, not only in Arkansas, but throughout the country. But this was an interview that Pitcock did in Nevada right after his arrest. It was an exclusive of Channel 7, but he worked out an interview, and it was not an easy task, to say the least.
So Walker is in county jail in South Lake Tahoe, Nevada. And, you know, we're here in Little Rock, and he wasn't an easy person to interview. I mean, he was in prison most of the time, and they said, no, you can't interview him. So I called his attorney. Long chance, maybe, I could get an interview with him. So the attorney said, well, let me check with him, and I'll get back to you. So he called me the next morning, and he said, James said okay to the interview. And I said, when can we do it? And it's like Thursday or Friday. And he said, can you be out here by Monday? And I said, yes.
Well, he talks to him about his escape.
April 11th, 1975, you are officially listed as an escapee. Did you not go back to the prison by impulse, or was this planned on your part?
Well, of course, I'd been confined for 12 years at the time I left. And it got to the point, you know, my court hearings, my trials and everything were such a mockery of justice. All my parole board hearings, I couldn't see any daylight. Every time I went up for parole, there was massive protests, and I just got to the point where it wore me out. I think the letter I wrote to the governor at the time I left explained it pretty well. It was a very difficult decision for me to leave because I had met, you know, a good many wonderful people in Arkansas, some of the best people I ever met in my life. And it was hard for me to violate the confidence that they had put into me. It was a hard struggle within myself not to go back, but I was at the point in my life where I couldn't go any further, and I couldn't see any daylight as far as ever getting out.
Some people had said during that time, when you would go around the state preaching, that you were just conning the people, that you really hadn't changed. After you left, you just added fuel to their fire. Were you trying to con the people?
No, sir. That was the worst thing you can do to someone if you want to cast some doubt upon his character is, especially if it's a religious nature, is to say that, you know. There's no way to prove. I think my actions in the 12 years that I was confined there, especially after my spiritual conversion, was my actions spoke for themselves. I did something with the faith that God gave me.
That's an interesting exchange there, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he's talking about being a born-again Christian and all those things. It's like he's trying to justify the fact that he escaped.
Right.
Like that was just something that he had the choice of doing and just decided to do it, almost like there was nothing wrong with it.
Well, and, you know, I mean, I can't get inside of his head, obviously, but he's also thinking about extradition and you're going to have to come back. So you start the PR campaign, I suppose.
Yes. And he was arrested, as Jim said earlier, in a petty crime. He was selling drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked him up. And, Jim asks him about his arrest.
Back in the early 60s, when you were convicted of murdering that Northwood White policeman, I heard you once say that you just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Is that the same thing that happened to you out here on the drug case?
Not necessarily. I got careless. I had two roommates living with me out here. And one of them was involved in some sales of some drugs, was trying to raise some money to move back to Massachusetts. And foolishly, I sold some trying to help him to someone who I thought was a friend. Turned out to be the man who had been in some trouble with narcotics himself and was an informant for the police, and turned me in, and consequently led to my arrest. And that's why I'm sitting here right now.
I'm talking with Randy Dixon, one of our usual Monday tours through archives that you can find on the website for the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. We're continuing the story of James Dean Walker, one of the more infamous criminal stories of the mid-20th century in Arkansas. What next, Randy?
Well, Jim also talked to a spokesman from the police department in Nevada, and he had his details on the arrest.
Who was wanted out of Arkansas for unlawful flight and escape. We contacted the local FBI agent here, and Mr. Lockhart contacted us from Arkansas. Then Mr. Simpson, or Walker, was scheduled to appear in court the following Monday, and we arranged to meet him at the court building, so to say. He was there were five of us there. When he came in, he went back to the jury room to confer with his attorney, and he was taken into custody at that time.
Did you have any problems? Or?
No.
All right, so you have James E. Walker. He's in Nevada. He's fighting extradition.
Yes.
There are people that...
Well, and you heard the officer mention Lockhart.
Yeah.
Well, that was Art Lockhart, the director of state prison system, and that was James Dean Walker's reason, as he said, to fight extradition, because he feared for his life, and he blamed Art Lockhart.
Mr. Lockhart had me handcuffed up, thrown in the back of a pickup, and carried to his office, where he verbally threatened me and intimidated me and told me that I wasn't running anything at Cummins, and that he was in charge there, and that if I didn't like it, that he would see to it that I was buried in that goddamn field out there. Excuse the words. And, of course, you know the history of the Cummins prison. There had been inmates buried out there before.
It's somewhat amazing that this has not turned into at least, or has not at least inspired a movie.
Well, I think at one point CBS was looking at doing a movie, and for some reason, it never materialized.
All right. Now, he had legal representation, of course.
Yes, out in Nevada, and KGV also talked to him, and he expressed, extreme concern about Walker's extradition and his safety.
Our fight is really in two arenas. One, it's in Arkansas. I'm going to convince the governor there that he should not issue a warrant. If it becomes necessary, and if a warrant is issued from Arkansas, then I will be speaking with Governor Brown, and I'm going to convince him at that point that he should not issue his warrant. That's going to take the support of all of James Dean Walker's friends, which are considerable, both in Arkansas and in California, as well as my own efforts.
And if you don't win?
Don't like to think about that. if we're not successful and if he is returned, I have every indication that his life is in jeopardy and he may not see his 40th birthday. He's 39 now.
Randy, you talk often with Jim Pitcock, who was the longtime news director at KATV Channel 7.
Every week.
Your former boss. It sounds like he has a pretty vivid memory of this entire encounter that he had with Pitcock, or that he had with Walker in Nevada.
Oh, yeah, he has a great memory, mm-hmm. especially for detail. Well, let's just let him sum up what was going on at that time with him closing out his news report from Nevada.
The fight for extradition could take up to 90 days, and during that time, Walker will be kept here in a special maximum security cell at the El Dorado County Jail under $500,000 bond. This is Jim Pitcock at Lake Tahoe reporting for News Scene 7.
He was extradited. Mm-hmm. Was returned to Arkansas, which is now a whole nother chapter in the saga of James Dean Walker. So how about next week we kind of wrap things up and kind of tell what happened once he got back?
All right.
There are several more twists and turns to this story.
Yeah, and it's a fascinating story. And I want to remind you that you can find all kinds of fascinating stories if you put Pryor Center into a website. It's the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Hey, Randy, before you go, and we're speaking of history, I want to make a pitch for a piece of Arkansas history that if people are driving by, they should spend an hour or so at, and that is the Japanese Internment Museum in downtown McGee.
Wow.
It's a small museum in a former train depot, and you got to get off mm-hmm. the big highway. You got to go to the old downtown, which unfortunately is pretty desolate. But this museum, which has now been open for more than 10 years, is quite something and fairly unflinching in the story of taking American citizens, some of them third generation, moving them half a continent away behind barbed wire in Jerome and Roar. It is well worth the $5 you pay for admission.
Well, and we've actually interviewed George Takei, mm-hmm. Mr. Sulu, who was actually shipped to Roar
yeah.
from California when he was a very small boy. And it's a great interview. If you go to the Pryor Center and go to Arkansas Memories, you can find George Takei's interview.
So,
and it's fascinating. He's very emotional about it.
So go to the Pryor Center, watch that interview, and then I would suggest going to McGee and to that museum.
I think that's a great idea.
And Randy, I would suggest that we get back together next Monday and conclude the story of James Dean Walker. How's that?
Oh, that's great.
Randy Dixon, thank you so much. I'll talk to you next Monday, buddy.
Okay, talk to you then.